Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 22nd day of May, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And let's start off today with another one of those stories that isn't going to get much coverage from the waste stream for obvious reasons. And it also kind of helps to explain why two Facebook, Twitter, and the like really hate the alternative press, especially Alex Jones and Infowars.com. This piece comes from Infowars via Kellen McBreen, and it's about Somali teens who've attacked people with hammers in Minnesota while the waste stream media prefers to stay silent. 8 to 10 juveniles, it said, hit citizens with hammers and metal pipes at a transit station not too far from a place that's become known as Little Mogadishu. Several were injured, and it took place on Friday, May 17th, but has yet to receive any coverage, said McBreen as of yesterday, by any mainstream news outlet. And this is interesting, although it does come from Facebook, so take it with a grain of salt. A witness said it was a group of young Somali males with hammers and bars. They were attacking anyone who looked like they had money or were white. I kind of hurried an older white lady away and walked a few blocks to catch a bus, said the witness. They pretty much ignored me, but I was in ratty work clothes and I'm half Arabic. Guess they gave me a pass. Oh, and if you wonder what kind of representation in the Communist House of Representatives, the place that's been labeled the terrorist recruitment capital of the United States by Fox News has, look no further than controversial, it says, Muslim representative, Sikh Ilhan Omar. Oh, this is funny, and it fits here, who actually just said this in a recent podcast, quote, "And ignorance really is pervasive in many parts of this country," unquote. And do you think? And speaking of the Communist House, those same anti-constitutionalists are throwing a veritable hissy fit today after former White House lawyer Don McGahn failed to show up for his public flogging and basically told the House to go pound salt. Says the Associated Press, more Democrats are calling and more shrilly for impeachment proceedings against Donald Trump after his latest defiance of a Constitution-defying Congress by blocking his former White House lawyer from testifying on Tuesday. It got so bad that the Speaker of the Traitors, Nancy Pelosi, even called a meeting to discuss strategy for overturning the Constitution and impeaching this guy, regardless of whether they have any evidence or not. And are you ready for today's attempt at Whopper of the Week from the Majority Leader, Steny Hoyer, who told reporters, quote, "We are confronting what may be the largest, broadest cover-up in American history," unquote, except for the last 4 decades or so. Obviously, he's forgotten mass executions in a Waco church, more than just a few buildings having been blown up and the evidence covered up, and quite a few witnesses who've ended up dead, fast and furiously even. But somehow the wannabe communists don't seem to concern themselves with mere trivialities like lots and lots of dead people. I guess especially if they're really, really young. And you know what? I don't think Donald Trump or his people have bleach-bittered or hammered into non-existence so much as a single disk drive. Now, what's also funny, in a disgusting kind of way, is that FBI Special Counsel and Chief Witch Hunter Robert Mueller, who still couldn't find or make up enough evidence to placate his mob, is hesitant, says another piece, to appear before the Communist House Judiciary Committee over his fears that he might appear political, says his team. And gee, folks, that sounds a bit like the occasional Cortex deciding not to tweet because she might appear idiotic. Junkyard Jerry Nadler is threatening him with a subpoena, too, saying, quote, "We will subpoena whoever we have to subpoena. We will hear from Mueller, Octung. We will hear from McGahn. We will hear from a lot of other witnesses." And I guess he could have added, "We'll hear whatever we darn well want to hear, and we'll keep raising hell until we do." Mueller, though, says InfoWars coverage has rarely commented on his investigation, sick, while it was ongoing, and his spokesperson declined to comment now. Attorney General William Barr, on the other hand, said last week he didn't mind if Mueller testified, quote, "It's Bob's call whether he wants to testify." And basically, say observers outside the circus, just exactly what kind of information the Democrats think they'll get from Mueller that already isn't in the almost 500-page report is unclear, as he is already forbidden from disclosing grand jury material, which was in fact redacted, and they weren't happy about that either. Mueller's reluctance, says this piece, highlights that the Democrats are now waging a political battle against President Trump. Gee, do you think? rather than a legal one. As if, folks, the law still made a darn bit of difference in post-constitutional America. Now, kudos to the Gateway Pundit for this next clip, which I think fits very nicely here and makes the hypocrisy point, too. This is from one of Bathhouse Berry's final major whoppers when he sat down with none other than Al Sharpton for an interview in November of 2016. By which point, it now seems more than obvious, he knew he was lying through his teeth.
Historically, both under Democratic and Republican administrations, our goal has been and should be that our investigators and our prosecutors are independent of politics, that they're not politicized, that they're not used as a weapon to advantage either side in partisan arguments. And I want to make sure that we continue with that tradition and with that norm.
And hey, what can I say? That deserves the full fanfare.
Our goal has been and should be that our investigators and our prosecutors are independent of politics, that they're not politicized, that they're not used as a weapon.
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. Well, I ain't got a witness, and I can't prove it, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
That they're not used as a weapon, in other words, by those that we don't already want to make sure are properly disarmed. Because obviously, folks, some animals really are more equal than others. We have to follow that up with a teaser. This comes from investigative reporter and journalist John Solomon, who says the first batch of documents to be declassified over the next 7 to 8 days or so will surround something called Bucket 5. And that includes intelligence documents that were presented to the infamous Gang of Eight in 2016 pertaining to the infamous FISA application used against U.S. person Carter Page, including, goes the background, all exculpatory intelligence documents that may not have been presented to the FISA Star Chamber Court. Presumably, continues Solomon, this would include the recently revealed State Department Kavalik email and the FBI transcripts from wiretaps of George Papadopoulos, also listed in the Carter Page FISA. And that next 7 to 8 day interval would put the release sometime between Trump's state visit to Japan between the 25th and 28th of May and his upcoming state visit to the UK from June 3rd through 5th. And I guess that means stay tuned, because they may include all kinds of interesting stuff that Big Brother's deep state minions didn't want you to ever hear, and you wouldn't have had Hitler won as they intended and the election rigging by the real colluders gone off as planned. Now, here's a bit more of the stuff that we might eventually be getting to hear. First, that President Trump can prove the July 31st, 2016 Operation Crossfire Hurricane Counterintelligence Op originated from a scheme within the so-called intelligence apparatus by exposing the preceding CIA operation that created the originating EC, or Electronic Communication Memo, a two-page document that the scumbag John Brennan gave to the scumbag whoremeister James Comey. Furthermore, it might include releasing and declassifying all of the Comey memos that document the investigative steps taken by the criminal conspirators in the FBI as an outcome of the operation coordinated by CIA Director John Brennan in early 2016. And they might also reveal the November 2015 through April 2016 FISA 702 search query abuse by declassifying the April 2017 court opinion written by then FISC presiding judge Rosemary Collier, showing the FBI contractors behind the 85% or so fraudulent search queries, which, say the reporters, was a weaponized surveillance and domestic political spying operation. And Judge Collier seems to have laid that out in detail. That'd be interesting to read, wouldn't it? A lot more so than Mueller's report. Sarah Carter, who joined John Solomon on Sean Hannity's show Tuesday night on Fox, added that the Bucket 5 also includes transcripts and tapes of George Papadopoulos and Carter Page saying there was no way the Trump campaign was working with Russia, which, not surprisingly by now, the Obama FBI and Department of Justice did not bother to share with the FISA court. And if the House would really like to get to the bottom of what was going on, and you know they don't, they could subpoena former DOJ National Security Division head John Carlin, or haul him in front of a grand jury, and ask just why he hid all of that abuse from the FISA court in October of 2016. Why the DOJ NSD then rushed the Carter Page application to beat NSA Director Admiral Mike Rogers to the FISA court, and why Carlin then quit immediately thereafter. Yeah, inquiring minds might like to hear that. Inquiring minds, though, don't work for the waystream media, it would seem. The Carter Page FISA application was clearly fraudulent, based on all kinds of deceptions. Those would be fun to see, wouldn't they? And how about this? Some have suggested that maybe, eventually, all of the Lisa Page Peter Strzok text messages should be released without redactions. If I repeated some of them here on the air, I'm sure I'd have to bleep the heck out of them. But in any case, it would be interesting to see what kind of conversations were taking place when Operation Crossfire Hurricane and the insurance policy went into full swing. Says the conservative Treehouse, the current redactions were made by the very people who weaponized the intelligence system for political purposes, which is why the Page and Strzok texts were redacted in the first place.
Our investigators and our prosecutors are independent of politics, that they're not politicized, that they're not used as a weapon.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for.
And there is a whole lot more, but of course, the question is, will we or will we not ever see them in our lifetimes? Well, folks, just maybe in a week or so, we might be able to answer some of that. Next item is a story that I literally didn't intend to do, but it just fits so well here. Doesn't even need any comment. From ABC News, new charges, they say, will accuse crooked lawyer Michael Avenatti of misappropriating money that was supposed to be paid to hooker Stormy Daniels when Avenatti was allegedly representing that adult film actress in her public battle against President Trump and his former attorney. The also disgraced Michael Cohen. Well, there you go. At least when she slept with Trump, she got paid. Arguably, this is a good day to recap some of the other things that we've learned about what Obama knew and when he knew it. Like this one from Joe Hoft at the Gateway Pundit. Unequivocally and absolutely without a doubt, it begins, Obama knew about the spying and was in on it. We don't know how much spying and attempts of entrapment went on. What we do know is already enough that it would have constituted grounds for actual impeachment, high crimes and misdemeanors, and basically demonstrating that everything he's done made Tricky Dick Nixon's enemies list look like a dinner invitation by comparison. And we know that Obama was in on it based on a number of pieces of information. For starters, Obama spied on numerous people for years while he was president. He took the U.S. intelligence community and corrupted it, using the U.S. intelligence apparatus to spy on anyone and everyone, and especially his enemies. We put a list of the many individuals and entities, notes Hoft, Obama spied on in a link. We also know that Hitler's long-lost emails were found in the White House. That was reported by Judicial Watch back in April of this year, announcing that Bill Priestap, former assistant director of the FBI's so-called counterintelligence division, admitted in writing and under oath that the FBI did find Hitler's emails in the Obama White House, specifically the executive office of the president, and they admitted also that about 49,000 of the treason-inspiring things were reviewed as a result of a search warrant for emails found on none other than Anthony Weiner's laptop, which is still hidden somewhere, if it exists at all. We also note, Hoff continues, that Susan Rice, Obama's former national security advisor, left an email on the last day she and Obama were in office confirming he was in on it. Senators Grassley and Graham sent her a letter asking about it, to which she replied, President Obama began the conversation by stressing his continued commitment to ensuring that every aspect of this issue is handled by the intelligence and law enforcement communities by the book. The president stressed that he's not asking about initiating or instructing anything from a law enforcement perspective. He just reiterated that our law enforcement team needs to proceed as normally it would by the book.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Oh, good grief. and they evidently felt guilty about their increasing and now exposed crimes because they sent this email, says Hoft, in an attempt to cover up their patently illegal actions. But, well, unfortunately for them anyway, nobody except the WAPO and CNN are buying it. We also know, he continues, that by advising President-elect Donald Trump in the Oval Office not to hire General Michael Flynn, he was inadvertently admitting he was involved in the coup. And it arguably had to do with the reasons Flynn was fired by the Obama regime as head of the military's intelligence branch. And who could forget this admission by Mr. Perjury and Treason, James Clapper, in March of 2019 to CNN's Anderson Cooper, who said, quote, "One point I'd like to make, Anderson, I don't think it's come up very much before." No, I don't think it did either. And I'm alluding to now is Trump's criticism of President Obama for all that he did or didn't do before he left office with respect to the Russian meddling. Here's the money part of the quote, folks. "If it weren't for President Obama, we might not have done the intelligence community assessment that we did that set off the whole sequence of events, which are still unfolding today, notably Special Counsel Mueller's investigation." And yeah, the word sick certainly applies there, doesn't it? Spell it how you want. "President Obama is responsible for that," said Clapper, "and it was he who tasked us to do that intelligence community assessment in the first place." Well, if that's not an admission, folks, in hindsight anyway, you do have to wonder. Of course, he may have just been sending another CYA-style warning. And the Gateway Pundit concludes with a few observations from former U.S. Attorney Joe DiGenova, who was on the radio Monday and said that Obama knew about it all. Quote, "Of course he knew. The Mueller report," he added, "was, get this, folks, adolescent, first-year law school crap, a disgrace to his entire career. And if anybody else had done this, what Mueller did," he said, "he'd be fired." We'll get into more detail on that in just a minute. Moving on to Comey, he noted that that man was the most criminally corrupt FBI head in history, and when it got to Papadopoulos, he referred to spy slut, that's an insider term evidently, as is honeypot, of course, and probably a CIA spy slut at that, Azra Turk. And her real mission wasn't to obtain evidence, it was to plant evidence for the upcoming unintended FISA warrant. Concludes this piece, "Obama was in on it, it was a sham, as was the Mueller investigation, and Obama clearly spied and ordered the spying on the opposition party." And guess what, folks? For reasons that almost certainly included a whole lot of other stuff, only some of which we're starting to hear about, that they intended to cover up and would have gotten away with if they'd been able to get away with the election rigging or the subsequent coup as planned. Or perhaps even more frighteningly, if President Trump hadn't been smart enough to not rely solely on Secret Service protection to keep him alive. On next to just some of what Joe DiGenova probably meant when he referred to the Mueller report as, among other things, adolescent first-year law school crap. In this case, via a summary from Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden, starting with the Federalist Margot Cleveland, a former law clerk of nearly 25 years' experience and instructor at the College of Business, University of Notre Dame, who said the Mueller report fails to consider whether or not the dossier authored by former MI6 spy Christopher Steele was Russian disinformation. And Steele, furthermore, was not charged with lying to the FBI. To not consider that obvious fact is, well, incompetent at best. As Cleveland puts it, given Mueller's conclusion that no one connected to the Trump campaign colluded with Russia to interfere with the election, one of these two scenarios must be true. Either Russia fed Steele disinformation, or Steele lied to the FBI about his Russian sources. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley raised the issue with Attorney General William Barr last week when he asked, my question, Robert Mueller spent over 2 years and $30 million investigating Russia interference in the election. In order for a full accounting of Russia interference attempts, shouldn't the special counsel have considered whether the Steele dossier was part of a Russian disinformation and interfere campaign? To which Barr replied, basically, it was time to look into that and see. The point here, folks, is that the real issue with Mueller's witch hunt report is what Arthur Conan Doyle referred to as the dog that didn't bark. From a famous Sherlock Holmes story, things that should have been considered, but about which silence speaks volumes. Like real Russian meddling and connections to a campaign that in hindsight it was clear he was covering up for. Like a dog who wouldn't bite the hand that feeds him, much less bark and rat him out. Mueller's second major oversight, sick, is the special counsel's portrayal of Maltese professor Joseph Mifsud as a Russian agent, when available evidence suggests that, just maybe, he was a Western agent instead. Here's the key point. Weeks after returning from Moscow, the self-described Clinton Foundation member Mifsud seeded the rumor that Russia had dirt on Hillary Clinton with the honeypotted and much maligned Trump campaign advisor George Papadopoulos, April 26th of 2016. And as Devin Nunes of California noted on Fox News Sunday, how is it we spend $30-plus million on this as taxpayers, and they can't even tell us who Joseph Mifsud is? Furthermore, he notes this is important because in the Mueller dossier, they use a fake news story to describe Mifsud, and in one of those stories, they even cherry-pick it. Nunes went on to note, look, I don't think the American people expect 20 DOJ lawyers and 40 admittedly tainted, your host notes, FBI agents, to write a 450-page report that's built of news stories that in many cases they themselves generated. And what I have a problem with, he continued, is this. When the stories they pick from are their own even, then they cherry-pick from them besides. And I think it's becoming more and more clear why U.S. Attorney Joe DiGenova used terms like adolescent and crap to describe it. Dan Bongino was a little bit more blunt. He said when it came to Mifsud, either we have a Russian asset who's infiltrated the highest echelons of friendly intelligence services, or we have a friendly who was setting up George Papadopoulos. Representative Matt Gaetz notes one more anomaly. Wondering why Robert Mueller never inquired about Peter Strzok and Lisa Page's so-called insurance policy when he finally got around to firing the guy after he was outed. When Mueller testifies in front of the House Judiciary Committee, says Gaetz, I'm going to ask him why he never even asked about what evidence might have been polluted by Strzok and Page. Unquote, and I think the answer's obvious. Even if we're still waiting for the unredacted truth. Let's start to wrap it up with a look at the economic meltdown, and sometimes the cracks are more obvious overseas, where the Turkish lira, among others, tumbled as much as 1% against the dollar earlier today, said Zero Hedge, leading a decline across emerging markets. And while there wasn't a specific event behind today's mauling of Turkey, to many investors it's become the canary in the emerging markets coal mine. And selling picked up after Turkey said soldiers had been dispatched for training in Russia ahead of delivery of their S-400 missile defense system. While the Kremlin condemned on Wednesday as unacceptable a U.S. ultimatum to Turkey to force Erdogan to cancel the deal to buy their Russian surface-to-air missiles and purchase U.S. Patriot missiles instead. Or else, of course, face sanctions. And cable, too, is crashing as Bloomberg reports that British PM Theresa May is facing pressure to abandon her Brexit deal, such as it is, and quit as British Prime Minister within days. According to people familiar with the matter, and several senior government officials said they were shocked, I tell you, that the PM's new offer intended to win votes for her latest Brexit cave had been received so badly, so quickly. Cable plunged almost 2 full handles from the post-May New Deal hope of yesterday afternoon after it became increasingly clear, said Zero Hedge, that her latest and, yeah, last gambit is dead on arrival. Meaning, says Ms. Shedlock, that early hopes of avoiding the hard Brexit have been dashed by a combination of May's failure and rising Euroskeptic sentiment all across Britain and Europe. And it certainly looks like Nigel Farage's Brexit party is now on a stunning roll, because they've taken a firm stand, and people are sick and tired of the alternative. Renowned geopolitical and financial cycle expert Charles Nenner, appearing on Greg Hunter's USAWatchdog.com, said if there ever was a global canary in the coal mine warning for the financial system, it's German bankster Deutsche Bank, who last year said if DB went below $8 a share, you, quote, should be worried, and now it sits at $7.40 per share, and now he's saying if it breaks $6.40 a share, the downside target price for the most systemically dangerous bank in the world is zero. And the world's in trouble. Meanwhile, though, Bill Blaine says the worldwide house of economic cards is about to collapse for 2 reasons, one of which is Tesla, which is basically a stinking mess, where for more reasons than we have time to recount, the moment, as he calls it, is coming, and the other is Europe, where the big market threats are the bond market, and especially the bond market. And furthermore, he notes the upcoming elections in the EU may even make Brexit look tidy. So while the good news is the evils of socialism are becoming manifest, the bad news is, yeah, it'll be ugly. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.